To relieve the hardship, I think someone in England, you can correct me on this, thought up a thing called the kiddie scheme, which proved to be one of the most controversial aspects of the lockout. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Dora Montefiore was a member of quite a prominent liberal Jewish business family, wealthy family in Britain. She herself was a socialist. In fact, later I think she was a founder member of the South African Communist Party and amongst other activities. But she was a very prominent, very well-known socialist campaigner and campaigner for women's rights. And Jim Larkin, early on in the dispute, went to address a meeting in the Royal Albert Hall, and she happened to be one of the other speakers. And at the meeting, she asked Larkin, would he be interested in such a scheme that would allow strikers' children to be brought out of Dublin and, you know, sent to be fostered in the homes of British trade unionists? And he agreed to that at the time. So she announced it publicly off the platform and came to Dublin shortly afterwards to organise it. Now, this wasn't that unusual. This had happened in Britain. It had happened in the United States. It had happened in Belgium and probably other places where there was a protracted strike. Strikers' children were sent to the homes of other trade unionists. I mean, nowadays, probably it would be banned because of child protection concerns and so on. But I think you know, the vast majority of these children would have been well looked after in these homes. But it caused uproar in Dublin, and it alienated William Walsh, the Archbishop, Catholic Archbishop of Dublin, who up until then had been trying to play a neutral role in the dispute, although most of the local clergy in Dublin were viciously anti-trade union and very pro-employer. His position changed once this scheme was put there. But basically what happened was it was denounced in Murphy's papers, and you've got to remember that William Martin Murphy controlled the Irish Independent, the Sunday Independent and the Irish Catholic and some other publications as well. He was in a very dominant position, not unlike, to be honest with you, independent newspapers today. And, you know, and if you look at the other organs, and there's no left-wing paper at all. In Larkin's day, there was at least the Irish Worker, which had quite a large circulation. But the overwhelming majority of the media in Dublin at that time were controlled by Larkin and other employers. So it was very easy to depict this scheme as an attempt to, by godless socialists, to kidnap, and the term kidnap was actually used, Irish children and take them off to be indoctrinated in Britain. And if they weren't going to the homes of atheists and socialists, they'd be going to the homes of Protestants. And you suspect that, in fact, the threat of them going to a Protestant home was probably considered more serious by the Catholic Church. But it all happened also at a time when Dublin had a large Protestant population, and there was an internecine war going on over children anyway. There was a well-established practice by the Irish Church Missions in Dublin. The Irish Church Missions were set up during the famine to proselytise, basically, during the famine. And it had very little success, really, in rural Ireland, but it did have success in Dublin, and it was still very active at the time of the lockout. And basically what would happen is quite a lot of Dublin working class women would give one of their children to the Irish Church Missions to go into an orphanage where they'd be well looked after. And in return, the mother would get money, usually quite significant amount of money, as much as 10 shillings a week in many cases, plus food and fuel, which would help to look after their other children. St. Vincent de Paul campaigned vigorously against this, but the problem Vincent de Paul had was that there were relatively few poor Protestants, so the Irish Church Missions had a lot more money to spend bribing poor Catholics to become Protestants than the Vincent de Paul had to, you know, get them back again by counter-bribes. And it was quite a nasty campaign. I mean, one of the most horrific cases I came across was one where a woman had given all of her four children to a Protestant orphanage, and this aroused serious concern, obviously, in the local sodality, and they went down to see this woman and find out what was going on, and they found she was dying of cancer in a cellar. She was actually persuaded to get the children back again, and she was put into St. Vincent's Hospital by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul and looked after until she died. But after she died, the four children that they'd taken back into care themselves and put into homes, Three of them were sent off to Catholic industrial schools, and the fourth one, who was very small, only a few months old, died in unspecified circumstances. But it just shows you, I mean, the children were very much used as weapons in this dispute. So when you had someone like Dora Montefiore, who was a rich socialist, suffragette, Jewish member of a very wealthy family, and she really symbolized everything that the Catholic Church would have abhorred at the time. So their reaction to her was visceral, really, and to her her assistants who came with her. And herself and one of her main assistants, Lucille Rand, who was actually the daughter of an American senator, U.S. senator, were actually arrested and charged with kidnapping by a father of one child, with the encouragement of the local clergy. And she was only, the charges only dropped after she agreed to leave Ireland and give an undertaking never to come back, which I'm sure she was only too happy to do. But the death blow to that scheme was when Murphy's Papers began to publish the names and addresses of parents who had allowed their children to go to England. Very small numbers went to England. All of the children appear to have had a positive experience there. One of the most interesting things about it was when it was over, Willie Walsh, Archbishop Walsh, came out and listed off the various objections to the children going to England. But the main one, very interesting insight into the thinking, he said that if these children were allowed to spend 6 months in England, they would come home with unrealistic expectations of what life held for them in Dublin, and that wouldn't be good for them or anybody else. So it was a very interesting insight he made. And that incident, most of those events happened in October 1913, did dent Larkin's authority and did cause quite a bit of dissent within the ranks of the strikers within Dublin. Once the scheme was dropped, it disappeared again, but there's no doubt it was an early indication of the power that the Catholic Church had on even urbanised Catholic Ireland at that time. There were literally priest-led mobs that went to all the railway stations and the docks and would stop anyone trying to board a train or a boat with children in their charge and demand to know who they were and prove that they were the parents. In fact, there were incidents where mothers were sent home with their children because they didn't have birth certificates or marriage certificates on their person to prove to the crowd's satisfaction that they were the parents of the children in question and weren't sort of operating on the cover for Dora Montefiore. So the extraordinary situation that arose in the city, as it was a very early indication of the sheer power that the Catholic Church could mobilise and totally override the interests of the children.